All right, I'm going to go ahead and call the state government finance meeting to order as the chair comes down. For Thursday, March 23rd, Representative Lilly, have you had a chance to read the minutes?
Yes, sir. I've moved the minutes, please. Okay,
Representative Lilly moves the minutes. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Minutes are adopted, and I am going to hand off the gavel.
The opening part is the hardest.
We're going to have Representative Jessup come first. And, you know, I have not had lunch, so I hope to goodness that you brought a treat. Welcome to the committee. And we're hearing your bill on informational purposes, House File 2196. And Representative Jessup, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Anderson, and esteemed members of the State Government Finance Committee. It is an honor as a freshman representative to appear before you for the first time. I recognize that this privilege opportunity by offering you some treats.
If Paige will assist.
I did.
That's next time.
Members of the audience, I don't leave you out.
Oh, wow.
Madam Chair, I just want to reflect that Representative Jessup has gone way above the call of duty.
Yeah, that puts you in star status right there, Representative Jessup. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Bill. Madam Chair, before I begin, I wish to offer an oral amendment.
Okay.
To put the bill in the appropriate form for discussion. So I'd ask you to begin on line 1.14 through line 1.15. The last sentence of the bill should read, a political committee selling goods or services must disclose to each purchaser prior to a sale, and these are the four words, their party affiliation and that proceeds may be used to make a contribution. So if we could add those four words. Their party affiliation and, after the words, prior to a sale.
Okay. And Mr. Gehring, did you get the amendment? Could you repeat it, please?
Madam Chair and Committee Members, so amendment page 1, line 15, after sale, you insert its party affiliation and.
Okay. And Representative Jessup, because this is not officially within our possession, we can't make that change, but it's good to know the legislator's author's intent, so we do appreciate that. Okay, and so to your bill with the thought of what the amendment would be, so as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, we have often discussed, we have discussions about campaign finances often and the desire to eliminate dark money. House File 2196, as amended, is before you with that intent. This bill puts restrictions on campaign contributions from the sale of goods or services by a political committee. Specifically, the purchaser of goods or services from a political action committee must be made aware that the transaction is actually a contribution to a political committee. Second, the bill specifies that proceeds collected from the sale of goods or services by a political committee cannot be contributed to a candidate's campaign committee or to a party unit. Now, I want you to imagine here, in the Capitol, as we're on the House floor, on our level, we have a small convenience shop on the same level as our House chamber. Probably many of us have used it. I want you to imagine that this store were operated as a political committee and that the revenue obtained from transactions were used to fund a political campaign, without customers knowing that their purchases were being treated as a political contribution. Would any of us endorse or accept such a practice? I think as both Democrats and Republicans, we can agree that such an action should never be allowed to occur, particularly in the Capitol, the People's House. One other prize venue, which we Minnesotans share, is the State Fair. Our great Minnesota get-together for 12 days in August is a treasured experience for all Minnesotans from across the state. We truly do come together as a state and celebrate corporately the values, accomplishments, and respect that we have for one another. The State Fair is holistically owned by all Minnesotans and is our opportunity to demonstrate and show pride in our great state. The bill before you is to eliminate a black stain that has been allowed to operate at our State Fair for the past several years. What I display before you is a typical food booth at the fair. This is a mini donut booth that has operated outside the grandstand for the past 40 years. It has been a profitable operation for which many of us in this room have purchased donuts while attending the fair. The expectation of anyone purchasing donuts at this booth is that it is simply one of many small businesses, food booths that operate at the fair. This is the wrong expectation. I'm handing around pictures of the booth that you'll all get to take a look at. This is pictures of the booth from each of the various sides, as well as pictures of the signs that are located at the booth. This booth is a political action committee, the 10th Ward and Rural Ramsey DFL Donut Booth. A handout shows pictures of the booth. There is no signage or other indication that it is indicated that is operated as a political committee. The Profit Action Committee is highly profitable, and it delivered just under $60,000 in campaign contributions last year. And it has an extremely healthy $115,000 cash on hand. In 2016, the booth had sales of over $200,000, about $206,000, at $5 per bag of donuts. That means that over 40,000 bags of donuts were purchased from this booth. I would expect that translates to 20,000 to 30,000 State Fair visitor purchases. Now, I would contend that few, if any, of these 20,000 to 30,000 customers knew that their purchase of donuts was actually a donation to a political action committee. So I ask all of us, do you want to defend this type of an operation? Does the end justify the means? Is it right to deceive people, making a purchase, and then having it become a political contribution? I don't think it does. And I think all of us, as colleagues and as fellow legislators, want to be held to a higher standard. Last, I would just say, of all places where this occurs, It's at our state's Minnesota get-together. Legislators, we can do better. I want you to know that previously I contacted the State Fair, and they have no issue with this bill. Members, I would just ask for your support on this type of initiative so that we can bring transparency to this operation and to ensure that no other similar type of operation can be established in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jessup. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify to this bill? Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, Representative Jessup. I was surprised when I looked at a piece of legislation by Representative Halverson, House File 410, since you're so interested in transparency and in elections, that you weren't a co-author on that bill dealing with independent expenditures and making sure that they're more transparent, these folks that spend millions of dollars, particularly in the last week of an election, to influence them, but yet not identifying who they are. Is that something we can count on your support for, given your strong interest in transparency?
Well, Representative Johnson, you know you can't ask a member what their intent is on another piece of legislation. Let's stick to your comment.
Well, let me just ask you then, thank you, Madam Chair, what your thoughts are on that particular piece of legislation.
Oh, well, again, Representative Johnson, that legislation isn't before us. The bill before us is House File 2196.
Well, Representative Jessup, you're a big man. Anything you want to say about it?
Representative Jessup.
Madam Chair, Representative, I have not seen that piece of legislation by Representative Halverson. I can certainly take a look at it. As you well know, I am a freshman representative, and I am trying to get my feet underneath me and to understand all of the operations and responsibilities here at the legislature. And I'm getting there, but I am not familiar with all pieces of legislation. It is certainly something that I could take a look at, but I am in no position to comment upon today.
Madam Chair, that me?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you apparently already voted no on government operations on this particular amendment to a bill, from what I understand. So I would just encourage you, if you're going to pursue this issue of transparency, that you take a look at that kind of legislation, because that is really going to have an impact on our election process here.
Okay. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I'm not mistaken, before we got started today, I thought I saw the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance Board, Mr. City Green. If he is here, I'd like to see if he'd like to come forward, because I do have a question that I'd like to ask him if he's still available today to visit with us.
Mr. Sigurdsson, welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jeff Sigurdsson, Executive Director of the Campaign Finance Board.
And Representative O'Driscoll.
Members, before I I would just ask you to pull up the nonpartisan research staff's memo on the particular bill that's in front of us, 2196. And in the second statement or second paragraph, it says, a political committee that sells goods or services must record and report those sales as contributions in the same manner as provided in current law for other contributions. The sale of goods and services for less than $20 would be able to be classified as anonymous contributions. And the reason I ask that question is I asked the same question when this bill was in front of us in the elections, government operations and elections policy committee, the one that I chair. And today we actually have the campaign finance executive director, and I would just like to, for the benefit of the members, ask the question about how those should be tracked and how that process work. And I'll narrow it down. I like donuts. And people I go to the state fair with probably like donuts as well. Maybe not as much as cleaning out the dresser drawers at home, but nonetheless, that was a story from another day. But so I go out and I say, you know what, let me buy you some donuts. There's four of us. So I take out a $20 bill out of my pocket and I buy $20 worth of donuts. And then the next day I'm there with another group of my friends and I say, well, you know what, I'll buy donuts. So I go up and I spend another $20 worth of donuts. If you look at the financial report, it shows that about 40% of the cost of the donuts purchased are ingredients, so $3 for every $5 bag would be a contribution. The question I have for the executive director is, should that be being tracked every time that I go so that if I aggregate over the miscellaneous $20, that we have the transparency that Representative Johnson was talking about earlier today occurring in this kind of situation?
Mr. Sigurdsson.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, two items. First, the entire amount of the purchase of the donuts would be a contribution. In other words, there wouldn't be a subtraction of the cost of producing the donuts. So if you buy $20 worth of donuts, they wouldn't be subtracting $12 for production. The full amount of the purchase is a contribution to the committee. excuse me, the requirement to take get the name and address of the person who's purchasing the donuts would only occur if you went over $20. And that would be at a point of sale. So in other words, if you bought $10 worth of donuts on Monday and $15 of donuts on Tuesday, there would not be an expectation for any political committee, including the one that you're discussing, to somehow be able to match up the $10 and the $15 and realize that we should have your name and address because you went over $20. It would be only in the situation where you'd buy over $20 of donuts in a single purchase that the name and address would be required.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't want to put anybody on the spot. I'll just put a hypothesis forward that I bet out of the 40,000 bags of donuts that were sold, somebody bought more than $20 at one point in time. And I wonder if we have records that show who those individuals were. I don't know if there's an answer to that question, but maybe it's rhetorical in nature for people to ponder. But it is a question, even if this is going to continue to exist as it does right now as a political fundraiser, if you will, that $20 needs to be tracked if someone comes in and purchases more than $20 at one point in time, as the executive director said.
Well, Representative O'Driscoll, you raise a very good point. So, Mr. Sigurdsson, has there been any analysis that they're actually keeping track to know if somebody bought $25 worth of donuts?
Madam Chair, the committee has been reporting the revenue from the state fair as miscellaneous income, which is a category used for items other than contributions, interest on accounts, sale of a hard asset. It could very well be, we would want to talk to the committee, but it could very well be that going forward they should be, regardless of this legislation, reporting those as contributions.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jessup, because you brought the donut piece forward, can you speak to other instances at the state fair, specifically where you, other things other than the donut place, do you have other examples of where you see this happening?
Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, this is the only incident that we know of. We have, House Research has looked into this. We do not know of any other operation at the state fair or elsewhere that are selling goods and services and then including the revenue that comes forward as a political campaign contribution. We do not have any record of those.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you probably know a little bit about this donut shop then, being we have some pictures and things. So who does the proceeds of this, who is the political entity behind it? Can you say something about that?
Representative Jessup?
Madam Chair, Representative, I do not know, only other than their name, which individuals are responsible for this political action committee. I do know that the contributions that they make go to various Senate District BPOUs, I would say, in the metro. I don't have the full breakdown with you on exactly which campaigns they would affect. But it's $60,000 of political campaign contributions that are received without, we'll say, the purchasers understanding where their money was actually going to be allotted.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know if the Senate district that you are in was a recipient of some of this donut money?
Representative Jessup.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, I do know. And that's one of the reasons why I learned of this particular operation in about the last year and a half.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jessup. So this is specific to Senate District 42, which you represent. You brought forward a donut legislation piece here, because other than that, we don't have other examples. So I just go back to the point that Representative Johnson made. I hope you support legislation that cleans up and gives transparency across all of Minnesota.
Do you care to comment, Representative Jessup?
Madam Chair, Representative, I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Representative, and I would hold as well that to all of us and be able to look at an operation like this and say, you know what, this is deceitful. And I hope that we can call it that. And I hope that we, as Republicans as well as Democrats, can say, you know what, this isn't really the way that we want campaigns to be funded. This is not an operation that we're proud of. And I would hope that we would be together in making sure that there is transparency in the gathering of funds for our campaigns.
Mr. Sigerson, so I'm just confused a little bit. I always thought that if an individual gave you $20 on Monday and on Wednesday gave you another $20, you had to report that. But now, earlier in your statements, you said that that's not reportable and that that's not, you know, you can't list it as, help me clarify that.
Sure, Madam Chair. That's correct, unless there was reason for the Treasurer to believe that that breaking out of the contribution was to circumvent the contribution limits and or disclosure limits. In other words, if you knew it was the same person that was coming into your office and every day giving you $20 and that it was adding up to over $200 and that they were doing that so that somehow it would avoid disclosure, that would be circumvention and that would be a problem. But because the statute doesn't even require you to write down or keep, the name and address of those $10 contributions, you need to write, it doesn't add up cumulatively to the point where you would be disclosing those at over $20.
Well, Mr. Sigerson, I could see this being ripe for abuse, you know. So then you're saying that the treasurer has to show intent to deceive on whether they knew who the person was or wasn't. So you're tacking up $20 at a time. You could have somebody, like you said, if it's like a BPOU office just coming in and putting a $20 in the jar every single time, you know, maybe they have their own payment plan that they've got figured out. That's just interesting. I always assumed that you had to keep track of all of that, and that's interesting.
Madam Chair, now that's the anonymous contribution threshold is the $20.
Wow. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jessup, I'm glad to see this again. I didn't get the chance to ask this question of my family before the last time I saw your bill, but I'm not a donut eater, as you know, and I'm not a cookie eater either, so just remember that I didn't miss that one. But I asked my wife if somehow we had made a purchase familially at the donut stand, and she remembers buying more than $20 worth of donuts. So, Representative O'Driscoll, I'm your example, or my family, or at least my wallet is your example. And, you know, I like making contributions to lots of charitable organizations, but, you know, I wouldn't have made the contribution had I known where this was going. So, I think that is indeed dishonest, and I'm glad that apparently so many of our DFL colleagues believe that this is something that should be wrapped into, I believe, what they call dark money. Maybe they're chocolate donuts, you know, dark donuts. But anyway, thank you.
Representative Johnson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to also, this committee's background and information, this isn't something that Representative Jessup just one day woke up and said, gosh, you know, the Senate district that I'm in, they're doing this, and I might be harmed by this. This is actually a news story that one of our major broadcast medias in the Twin Cities area took on as an investigative report, and they were the ones who actually broke this for the people in the state of Minnesota. Not Representative Jessup. Representative Jessup is just responding to something that's been in the media for a while.
All right. Any other questions, members?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Sigerson.
The board doesn't have an opinion on this bill, but administratively I do have to point out one problem with the author's amendment, excuse me, where it's been added that the party affiliation would then be provided prior to sale. Political committees do not have party affiliation. Candidates have to identify their party affiliation. Political party units obviously do. But a political committee does not have a party affiliation, so in this case, I'm not sure how that would work.
Okay, good to know. All right. With that, Representative Jessup, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representatives, for hearing me out. I would like to just mention one last point on this. What this bill is to pursue transparency of the operation. So there is communication to purchasers of the donuts at the booth that they are indeed making a purchase that will fund a political action committee. Whether this booth continues to exist at the state fair, should this bill be boarded into law, that decision is completely within the hands of the state fair board. We do not have any jurisdiction here at the legislature to determine whether this operation continues to exist at the state fair. But I do believe that it is a principle that we can all abide by, that we want transparency for these transactions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jessup, and appreciate the treats and you coming by today. Members, we are going to do Representative Driscoll next. And Representative Driscoll moves House File 1697 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. Representative Driscoll, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As many of you probably do recall, the federal government passed a law called the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA for short. And one of the things that had come about as a result of that legislation is that the federal government made money available to counties and other jurisdictions across the country that are responsible for the administering of elections. And the equipment is starting to become about 10 to 12 years old, depending upon the communities. And the federal government has informed us, when I say informed us, by the lack of providing any additional financing to replace this equipment under federal law, has advised us that they aren't planning on providing any money. And so Minnesota finds itself in a kind of a quandary where a lot of the election equipment is all of the same age, all of the same vintage, and will be experiencing the same kinds of decay or deterioration over time, and have difficulty finding parts to replace the equipment if there are issues. I've heard, as we've been working on this bill throughout the session, that many local units of government have accounts on eBay attempting to try to find parts to use to replace broken or worn parts in their equipment. And so what we're wanting to do today is to have a discussion, and I've got a number of folks who are going to come forward and talk about the scope and breadth of this issue. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'll be available for comments and to kind of interject along the way. But what I'd like to do is, if we could, maybe go to the Secretary of State and have him come down as one of the testifiers that's on the list. There are some other county representatives and officials here, and just kind of work through the list of today and questions.
Secretary Simon, appreciate you being here. You know, this is something that you did mention in your presentation earlier, so if you can kind of keep that in mind, we appreciate that. So we are familiar with the issue. This isn't the first time discussing it. But to the bill, Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate it. I will be brief since I did mention this, as the Chair noted in the overview. I just want to thank Representative O'Driscoll for his leadership, not just this session, but before on this issue. This really is a big deal. It sounds like one of those technical, dry issues, you know, elections equipment. But almost everyone I talk to around the state, in the various counties and the cities, they bring this up. It's a big deal. You have some information, or you should have in your packet, that lists some of the comments, and you'll hear from testifiers later, what they're saying about the state of the equipment now, the state of the equipment going forward. And there really is a big need. And just to quantify it, since this is a finance committee, obviously, if the state of Minnesota were to buy everything for everyone, it would be $28 million. But no one I know of is asking for $28 million. They're asking for some reasonable share, a helping hand from the state government, because otherwise, as the materials before you show, it's going to go on the property tax rolls. It's going to be property taxpayers who make up the bulk of this. And so, as Representative O'Driscoll says, this is a unique situation because elections administrators find themselves in a real bind. And the bind is that this is aging equipment that was paid for by the federal government the last time around, that belatedly they have learned they will not be getting a second helping of federal money. So it's not as if any county or city is at fault for not having planned for this, or they were asleep at the switch. They really are caught in a bind. And this is a mandatory function. It's not like a park or a trail or something that a county board or a city government can choose not to do in a given year. They have to do this. And about 80% of the ballots, in other words, the elections they administer, are not for municipal or local elections. They're for state and federal elections. So once upon a time in Minnesota, back in the 80s, the state government actually subsidized the cost, directly and indirectly, of elections administrator for that very reason. The idea being, well, between elections for state legislature and, you know, state auditor and attorney general and governor and whatever else, the bulk of the ballot was federal or state, so it stands to reason that there should be some sort of at least indirect support. We haven't done that since the 80s, but this is one way to recognize the predicament that they're in. As the old saying goes, sort of dig our well before we're thirsty, and I think that's important to do now, because if we don't do it soon, I think we're going to have some real problems. So we don't own even one piece of elections equipment in our office, so it's not about us, but we support the efforts of the counties, the cities, the townships, to get some support from the state government. So thank you for your time and attention. Really appreciate it. Thanks again to Representative O'Driscoll. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Simon. Anybody have any questions for the Secretary at all? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just someone who used to use this equipment begrudgingly, because I thought we were doing a pretty good job without it, but here it is. And this is going to come up again if we replace all this at once. Is just as something to throw out there, is there a way to continue to use old equipment and replace this in like three sections so that we don't have this big pile of money coming up all at one time every 10 to 15 years?
Secretary Simon or Representative Driscoll?
Madam Chair, I'll look forward to the Secretary's comments on it afterwards, but Representative Green, my thoughts are the federal government came in and paid 100%. No one knew what the federal government was going to do. Now we know. But the age of the equipment continues to accumulate on right before our eyes. Not every community is going to need to have everything right now. It's sort of a phase-in kind of a situation. And my hope would be that this would be a stopgap measure, that we'd say, okay, the feds came through the first time. The state's going to try to help the second time. Counties, let's be aware. Cities, let's be aware that you might want to start budgeting on this if there's a 10-year lifetime, that you're doing a 10-year capital improvement plan, including these kinds of equipments in there, so that we can use this as kind of the transfer station from the federal 100% to get the locals to be able to be the 100% by bridging that gap a little bit and giving them some planning time versus just a couple of years before that equipment may no longer be useful.
Representative Green? I will say, Representative Green, I share the same concerns with you. I think that, as most entities know, there's no guarantee anytime you get money from the feds for whatever it is that it's going to be there the next time around. And I think for the counties that are here today, the same should be said on the state side as well. So if this is something that we do in this legislative session, you should be fully aware that you shouldn't be anticipating that 10 years from now that the same thing will happen for you. So I want that on the record because I want to make sure that people know that they're fully informed. I think that, quite honestly, for the counties that did assume that there wouldn't be additional funds from the feds or from the state, that they planned ahead and set that money aside, knowing that this could be potentially a cost to them later on, and I would expect that the counties do that for the future. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to commend Representative O'Driscoll for bringing this forward. It's a very big expense for local governments to put on an election, and reading some of the comments, the comment sheet in here and some of the equipment, the aging equipment, and the problems that actually do occur out in the hinterland there. In the city of Champlin, which I represent, and when I was mayor, and Representative O'Driscoll, you were mayor too, we rely on these machines, and when things go down, and they are more frequently going down, it's a big project and requires a lot of time and a lot of quick thinking on poll judges and election judges to get the election done. So everything that we can do to help out in the future, and I would echo the chair's comments too, is the fact is cities and other elected areas have to budget for this stuff on a regular basis. It's got to be there because if you don't, you're very remiss in taking care of one of the most important things for our democracy. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Secretary, could you address some of the system failures that have occurred in Minnesota and throughout the country and what's been done to address some of those issues?
Secretary Simon, and if you could indicate when you're citing this, whether it's in Minnesota or somewhere else.
Yes. I'll contain my answer to only Minnesota because I just don't have a good working knowledge of other
right.
states. But in Minnesota, and you'll see these are in your packets, and a testifier that you're about to hear from MACO, they did do a survey, a county-by-county survey, and what you have before you are some of, at least anecdotally, the reports from counties. But we have heard and do hear in our office, I can't cite you chapter and verse on particular counties, about system failures, some breakdowns, some trouble with the equipment. It tends to be a little bit more the assistive voting technology equipment than the ballot counting equipment. And just for members' benefit, we're talking about two pieces of equipment that virtually all precincts in Minnesota have. The ballot counter, that's the thing that you feed your ballot into in the polling place, and then the assistive voting technology, which is required by Congress. So the state couldn't change it if it wanted. So those are the two pieces of equipment, incidentally, about $10,000 a polling place to replace that. And that can add up pretty quickly. And so there are such incidents, and you have more or less a log before you of some of the examples of those, but we are seeing that more and more. We don't want to get to a point where we have repeated systemic patterns of breakdowns, and it's the idea of getting at this problem now and not in the future. And again, this is a match. All counties and townships and cities will have skin in the game here, so to speak. So this isn't a request, as I understand it, Representative Driscoll's bill for the state to pay the full freight. That's not the case here. It's just some sort of a generous match so that they can get over the hump and get the new equipment.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the AutoMark system, I know I'm a little bit familiar with that. I know it's not used a whole lot. Why is that so important to replace?
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, well, the AutoMark is a trade name. It's a one particular vendor's version of the assisted voting technology, but many jurisdictions have the AutoMark machine. And it is purchased for the purpose of enabling voters with a disability to use that, although it can be used by any voter. But it's typically and most often used by those with disabilities. And depending on the place, there may be only a few people per precinct who use that. But it is required by Congress, and that's something that we at the state wouldn't have the authority to change. Congress could, but they haven't.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I understand this correctly, we're talking about sharing of cost. Is there some possibility of some economy of scale by having the statewide purchase, even if we did it in three-year increments, that could be arranged for, even though there would be local participation in the funding of it?
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is a great question, and one that I probably should have mentioned earlier, which is that we are in the process right now, and it's quite a there are a lot of moving parts to it, of working on a statewide contract that counties could buy off of so they could buy it more cheaply by using and leveraging state purchasing power to buy in bulk, but it would be county purchases. So if Watton, one county, wanted to purchase a particular type of equipment, but there were four others that wanted to purchase from that same vendor, we could leverage state purchasing power to drive down the price. At least that's the hope. So our office is actively right now working on that with the Department of Administration to do that. And incidentally, that's the same method that was used back in 2004, 2005, 2006 when now Senator Kiffmeyer was Secretary of State. There was also a state contract at that time. So we're trying to replicate that effort from back then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's really good to hear. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. I see other testifiers. I've got Debbie Erickson, Jeff Megern, Randy Schreifels. Are they here?
Madam Chair, as Ms. Erickson is making her way to the testifying table, the Secretary has referred a couple of times to the document that is in your packet, and Ms. Erickson is actually the person who put out the request to all 87 counties and took the data, coordinated it, and formulated it. So I just wanted to publicly thank her for that effort on behalf of the legislature and getting us a scoping and an idea of what we're looking at. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Debbie Erickson. I'm the Crow Wing County Administrative Services Director. In my role there, I'm also the Elections Administrator for the county. And I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of County Officers. MACO would like to echo the thanks to Representative Ogestral in bringing this forward, as this is very important funding that we feel is excellent for us to start working on here in Minnesota. I'm not going to reiterate the things that Secretary Simon said about the current state of equipment, but I do want to kind of give you some detail that came along with the survey data that you have in front of you. We did recently complete a comprehensive survey of all 87 counties, and we actually got 75 counties to participate. So we feel that we have a pretty strong understanding of where things are at in terms of recent proposed and potential election technology purchases. Approximately 43 counties have purchased technology in the past 4 years. Over half of those purchased equipment to help process absentee or mail ballots. You've probably heard some statistical data that talks about the increase in absentee voters that we saw in 2016 with the advent of no-excuse absentee voting, where voters could vote early for any purpose. And in addition, we also had the new law in 2016 that allowed voters to participate in the direct balloting process if they chose to do so. This was for in-person voters who voted at the local offices during that 7 days prior to election when ballots can begin to be counted. If they chose to do so, they could put their ballot directly into the tabulator versus using the traditional method. In order to offer that option, counties must have equipment that is capable of holding all of the precinct data for their entire jurisdiction. A significant portion of the equipment that was purchased with the original HAVA funds has a capacity limit of only 10 precincts and was not able to be used. So that's why we saw several purchases occur in 2016 of only one or two pieces of equipment. There are approximately 20 counties who have purchased technology for use at the polling place level, and the majority of those purchases have been centralized in the metro area. Only four counties have actually purchased assistive voting technology to replace the automarks, which were currently the only certified equipment in Minnesota. Those four counties that did purchase assistive technology, I know at least three, if not all four of those, used existing HAVA funding that they had left over from the original scope of purchasing to assist in that purchase as well. Additionally, a few counties deployed electronic rosters in their counties in 2016 with some great success. The electronic rosters allow for expediency and efficiency in processing voters at the polling place and administrative savings in posting voter history and election day registrations. Additionally, the electronic rosters allow judges to better serve the voters in the polls and provide a reduced number of opportunities for manual errors by completing new registration forms or signing voters in, as well as maintaining a higher level of voter privacy. There are approximately 50 Minnesota counties that have current plans to purchase election technology in the next 4 years. But if a state funding partnership were available, that number actually increases to 73 counties. Most of these counties are looking to replace assistive and tabulating equipment. However, several counties, including those who recently purchased that equipment, are looking to include electronic rosters in their purchases as well. The flexibility of House File 1697 allows for any certified technology, so all Minnesota counties have the ability to take part of that. As you've heard, the cost of funding technology is a steep one, with the cost to outfit a precinct with tabulating and assistive technology up to $10,000 per precinct, and the cost for poll books is substantial as well, up to $1,500 per unit for hardware and software, and in most cases, most precincts need to have more than one unit in order to be able to adequately serve their voters. Counties estimate that the equipment purchase needs range anywhere from $50,000 to $1.3 million per county, and a total cost estimate for those counties that are ready to consider purchase is $19.6 million. 74% of counties have no funding established other than levy dollars in the year of purchase, or a combination of levy plus a cost share with the local cities and townships as well. There are 21 counties who currently have some level of funding set aside for technology purchases, as we have identified what needs we have in the future as well. Only about 25 to 50% of the purchase amount has been earmarked in most of those counties. We continue to recognize the need for this. However, the substantial price tag, sometimes 2% or more of a county's annual levy, makes it very difficult to compete with roads, public safety, and other local requirements. Additionally, as you've heard, counties administer elections on behalf of federal, state, county, cities, townships, school districts, and other special districts as well. However, there is only a mechanism in statute that allows for cost sharing with municipalities down the ladder, if you will, even though up to 80% of the ballot could be for state and federal offices as well. Without a funding partnership, only 32% of Minnesota counties would be able to purchase election technology in the next 4 years, which could lead to a wide disparity in voter experience across the state. House File 1697 creates this much-needed partnership and will enable all counties the opportunity to best serve the voters across the state of Minnesota. We thank you for your consideration, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Members, any questions for Ms. Erickson? I do. I have some questions. So I noticed in your packet, I didn't see a question asked in your survey of what the counties will do to pay for their share, because as you know, this is a match. So what is their plan? Is that a question that maybe you don't have in your packet that was asked? Or
it is actually on the third page, the third chart, Madam Chair. If you look on the third page of your packet, there's a chart there that says how will you pay for technology. Mm-hmm. That is identifying what the county's share would be. Okay. You'll see 54 counties had purchase with levy in the year of purchase. There are 9 counties that have identified capital improvement plan funds that they would utilize. 34 counties would utilize a cost share with cities or townships. And there are about 15 counties that do not know or don't have a fund in place. There are 3 counties who identified that they do still have some remaining HAVA funding from the original scope that they would be able to use as well.
And then, Ms. Erickson, the other question that I have is on the chart that's on page 2. It's the bottom chart, and it says, will you purchase in the next 4 years if state funding is available? 73 say yes, and 11 say no. So what happens of those 11 that say they don't participate in this program? Are they going to come back in, you know, 4 years and say, oops, we forgot, we should have done it? Are they going to be coming back to the state asking for more funds?
Madam Chair, we have been at a county level communicating across our organization for a number of years that we recognize we do have a significant portion of skin in this particular game. And the 11 counties who stated that they are not going to be purchasing in the next 4 years, it's a combination of a few things. One, they are exclusively mail ballot or have a large portion of their precincts are mail ballots and can handle the volume of ballots that they have with the equipment that they currently have in place and don't feel a need that they would have to replace. Or it is one of the precincts that have recently purchased and don't have any plans to additionally purchase again in the next 4 years.
Okay. All right. Members, any other questions for Ms. Erickson? I've got Jeff Mergen. Anyone else that is interested in testifying, please come to the table. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good afternoon. My name is Stearns County Commissioner Jeff Mergen, representing Stearns County and the Association of Minnesota Counties. Before I start, I'd like to thank Representative O'Driscoll for carrying the bill. Thank you. Because of the previous discussion here, most of my comments will probably be a little repetitive. So, but anyway,
here as a resource then.
I'm sorry.
Are you here as a resource then, Commissioner?
That's going to be our auditor, Randy Schreifels.
Okay. All right.
At the county level, we have discussed the cost of new voting equipment for years, but with the recession and wanting to keep the tax increases to a minimum and our other immediate needs, we simply cannot find room in the budget. And the cost of voting machines is not the only part of an election. Counties continue to pay for a large portion of an election, including most of the ballot costs, training of the election judges and the clerks, programming and maintenance of the machines, and recent increased absentee ballot costs. Since the largest portion of the ballots are made of state and federal races, it is appropriate for the state to partner with the local governments on the funding of this equipment. Thank you. Those are my comments.
Mr. Schreifels, you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Randy Schreifels. I'm the Stearns County Auditor Treasurer, and I'm here also representing Stearns County and the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll keep it brief. A lot of my points also have been covered. 11 years ago, we got approximately $900,000 to buy the equipment. And since then, we've been doing various efforts to keep the cost down, encouraging smaller precincts to share equipment and polling place and judges. We also had a number of smaller precincts that went to mail balloting, also reducing the costs of the equipment. the cost to replace the equipment in Stearns County, with also doing some central count machine to handle the absentee balloting and the mail balloting, is about $1 million. We're also looking to do poll books. That would be over $100,000. And that's assuming putting poll books in about 30 of our 99 precincts, so not all of them. But poll books, we think, have a lot of advantages in efficiency and also the security of the election. We also think it's, you know, we would appreciate any help the state could have, since a lot of the cost of the ballot is because of state and federal races. One other point I'd like to make is the cost of elections continue to arise. You know, they went up in 2016. We anticipated higher absentees, and they came in higher than we thought. So the board will see a higher increase in 18 because of that. We're going to be adding another absentee ballot location and staffing the ones we have a little bit more. Also, 2020, then, is a presidential election, so costs will also increase. So although equipment costs are important and we appreciate any help you have, the county still will be seeing other costs in elections. So I'd like to thank Representative O'Driscoll also, and I'd like to thank the committee for hearing the bill. So thank you.
Mr. Schreifels, can you tell me what kind of reserve do you have in place for these expenses that you know you're going to incur from every election cycle? So what do you put aside for it?
We haven't put anything specifically aside for it right now. We are talking to the jurisdictions about doing some cost share. We have some ideas and some plans, but we have nothing approved by the board yet. I've had it in the election, or in the budget, excuse me, a number of years. But with the recession and in our county, for 3 years, had actually a negative levy, so our levy went down. So it's just hard to have something that you know you're going to need in the future compete with immediate needs.
And Mr. Schreifels, so you said that you guys were looking at cost shares. So you're saying right now that your county doesn't do any cost shares with the other local units of government?
We did on the original purchase, and we do on other costs right now, yes.
Okay. Well, Mr. Schreifels, I'm going to try and help you out and say to your commissioner, this is a cost that you should be saving for the future, and I hopefully that you can put together a budget plan. If this does go through, you're still going to have this cost in the future, and you need to plan for that for the future.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I totally agree with you, and I think part of the plan to buy these equipment is a plan on how to do the next round also. So that will be a discussion we have with our local jurisdictions too. So, okay.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll wait till testimony is complete. If it is complete, there's somebody else waiting.
Say it again.
I'll wait till after testimony is completed.
Okay. Great. I don't have anybody else for the commissioner or Mr. Schreifels. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Okay. Oh, please come to the table. And is there anyone else besides this, a woman?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ruth Simpson, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Townships. And we just want to add our voice into thanking Representative Driscoll in putting this, plan forward. Townships also host many elections, although many of our townships are moving and have moved to the mail ballot, but many want to continue to have their local polling place because it brings a united voice in that this is our democracy and we want to have our own polling place where we gather together and vote on who should be in elective office. So I just want to add our voice that it's an important element to township government, and we want to continue to have it. And townships also have a hard time planning for this because we are almost entirely dependent on the property tax. So thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Simpson. Anyone have questions for Ms. Simpson? Representative Johnson?
Not a question to you, ma'am, so you're excused.
Oh. All right.
Wow.
Madam Chair?
Representative Johnson.
I guess my comment is, since it seems to me that both sides are very interested in seeing this move forward, and it is such an important item, the election process, I was wondering if, and then given the fact that the target is such that you're looking at a $90 million cut, if if there's any way that we could move this outside the target to get funding for it, given its well, it's really essential need, and I really appreciate Representative Driscoll bringing it forward. But I hear bipartisan support. I see the need from outstate and from the interested parties. I would hope that we could really make this one front and center. That's my comment, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Driscoll, wrap it up.
Madam Chair, I will dispense with the 14 pages of closing comments that I had and just put it down to about 25 words, if that's all right with you.
You have to bring treats for that.
You know, everybody in this country appreciates the fact that we have fair, open, and honest elections, and part of keeping that integrity is having systems in, that work. And part of those systems that work are the people who perform those elections, many times volunteers or pretty darn close to volunteers, and having equipment that's reliable. For the majority of the people who I'm looking at right now, you and I have the same kinds of desires on the night of elections to find out as quickly as we can how those precincts do, how do we end up doing, and those numbers can't be rolled up unless those the equipment that is used to tabulate that, to put those results on there, are working and reliable to be able to get that information to us and to the greater populace in the state of Minnesota as well. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you and members.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. And he's going to renew his motion that House File 1697 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance omnibus bill. Representative Thiessen, we've got House File 1969 here for informational basis. Welcome to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While this bill is fairly straightforward, it ends the practice and authority of the state auditor to charge fees to local municipalities and local units of government for audits, and instead funds those audits from the state general fund. It really is returning the way that the Office of the State Auditor and that audit function has been funded since that audit function was turned over to the state auditor in 1973. So when that happened in 1973, you know, it used to be done by a different office. In 1973, the powers were given to the state auditor, and we funded it through the general fund. Now, over time, that shifted a couple times, but always in the context of an enterprise fund, you know, where the office would have to charge fees and then cover its costs through those fees. This really originated back in the spring of 2015 when all the discussion was going on around the state auditor. In some sense, the office's inability to compete with some local accounting firms because of the cost that they had of raising enough fees to run their office. I just thought this was the cleanest way to end that controversy, if we would just fund the Office of the State Auditor and not have the office have to charge fees. So I just have a couple of advantages of this approach that I see. First, our local counties and cities and other local governments wouldn't any longer have to use their local property taxes to pay for audits. And this seems fair since we are the ones imposing these audit requirements on those local entities. So in many senses, the requirement that we have the auditor charge fees is a local unfunded mandate that the state of Minnesota puts on local units of government. And I would note that this is kind of how we deal with the legislative auditor. We do not allow the legislative auditor to charge state agencies for doing the work that they do, for the audit work that they do. You know, they do the program audits, but they also do these kind of fiscal audits, the legislative auditor, and we've decided that it makes no sense for taxpayers, taxes raised in one place to be raised to pay another government entity to do an office that is paid for taxes somewhere else. It's really just taxes chasing itself around in a circle. So this seems just the most straightforward way to do it. And I'm sure our local communities would love not to have to actually pay for these audits. So that's one advantage. The second, I think this would end this dispute that we have ongoing between local units of government and the state auditor's office over what the authority of that office actually is. I think one other advantage is we would get consistent, high-quality audits. I think the state auditor's office actually does a very, very good job of providing this really, really important work of government. If there's anything that's more important you know, I'm not sure in terms of our own accountability and our own ability to do our work, I'm not sure it's if there's anything more important. There might be things as important, but nothing more important than actually making sure that the resources that are raised from taxpayers and are given to local units of government from us at the state legislature and from the federal government are actually being spent legally and being spent prudently. And I think the state auditor's office actually does a very good job of that. And we would, again, get this consistency. And I also just think there's an issue of transparency here. You know, when we have the state auditor's office having to pay money or charge fees and then send those fees to the general fund and then we appropriate money to the state auditor's office, I mean, it becomes a much less transparent financial process than just a straight up, we're going to appropriate money and then we're going to have the state auditor come in and talk to us, the ones that are appropriating the money, about what that office is doing with the money. So I think that level of transparency is actually important. So those would be the advantages I would see to the bill. I would have one really important caveat to all of this, though. We have to fund this office at the level that allows it to do its job. And if we don't do that, no system or fix, and particularly this system or fix, which would rely on the general fund, makes sense. So if this legislature, this committee, decides that they don't think that we have the resources to actually fund the office of the state legislator, state auditor, at the level that's required to actually do the work that we want that office to do, then I would actually ask you not to pass this bill because we'd just be undermining a really, really important element of accountability and transparency and trust in state government that this office supplies. So that is it, Madam Chair.
Okay. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on this bill, Madam Auditor? Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Yes, Madam Chair, Rebecca Otto, the State Auditor. I want to thank Representative Thiessen for bringing this bill forward. We didn't actually get a chance to work on it together, and it's been a bit busy at the office, so I haven't had a great amount of time to review what it does, and I understand it's only an informational hearing today. But I like the concept. I think conceptually it's a good idea. And it would be contingent on full funding so that we can actually carry out the work that Minnesotans expect us to do. And I think that if this was something, you know, that we wanted to do, that we'd be happy to work with the author in the interim to try to work on technical issues that may be there, because there's other statutes that tie into our office, and there's not a lot of people that understand them really, really well. But, yeah, so that would be basically my testimony. And it would alleviate the issue with the counties having to pay for their audits.
Great. Members, any questions? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me that there would be some efficiencies in this that might actually save some money because we've been, as you described, moving money around and billing and that sort of thing that seems a little more complicated than maybe it would be with this arrangement. Is that real?
Representative Thiessen, Madam Auditor.
State Auditor would know better than me.
Madam Auditor?
Madam Chair, members, and Representative Ward. Yeah, if we were not billing for our services and you know, moving paperwork and the county's having to then pay and then the check's coming to us and then us forwarding to the state, there might be some efficiencies gained in that. There'd be some other suggestions I might have, too, around making sure that the local governments had some skin in the game to make sure they had their records prepared in a timely manner, because when you have skin in the game, you want to keep your audit costs down. You have to make sure you've done a good job of preparing or have a consultant do it for you and that it's ready in a timely manner so everyone, all the trains are on time. But, yeah, there could be some efficiencies in this as well.
Representative Warren? Representative Nash?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Thiessen, thanks for being here today and talking about this. It's an important issue we've been talking about a lot for the last three-some-odd years. I guess some of my questions or reservations are around maybe moving this away from what we've done the last couple of years because having heard from many counties, they're actually saving a considerable amount of money from what they had previously been charged. So I'm wondering, what is your thought on that? Because competition has proven to be a very good thing, apparently, for many of the counties. I'm just trying to figure out what the intent of your bill is here so I can better wrap my head around that.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. Well, I think that there, I think that the competition that you're talking about, Representative Nash, has to do with the cost of the audits, right? And so if the state is actually going to cover the cost of the audits, then they don't have to worry about getting a better price. On the other hand, I think that there's another piece of this discussion, which I'm sure that you have all had, which has to do with consistency and quality of the audits. And I think one of the advantages of this proposal, and I don't know who the particular auditors are in any particular county, but at least we'd have consistent standards, a deep understanding of what local governments are doing, and knowing what a local county over here is doing versus what a local county over here is doing, you know, in different parts of the state, to really understand, I do think that there's expertise that comes from being an expert. And I think one of the advantages of this is that we would have that higher consistency and knowledge base about what our local governments are doing with their money and how they're accounting for it. So I do think that there would be some advantages to that.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Houston, I think we agree on a good number of things. From the conversations that I've had and testimony that we've heard over the years and information we're getting back from the auditors that have been hired by the counties, the audit itself is, very much the same end product. So, I understand your interest in that consistency, but I would argue that allowing the outside audit firms who have to abide by the same standards as the state auditor would in their end product, allowing the market to come to bear and to provide some competitive pricing for the counties, I still think that's a better bang for the buck. And I think we're all trying to drive for the same thing, but I kind of like where we are now. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on it, though. Appreciate it.
And then just one other thing, the office of the state auditor, is not just an accounting office. It also is an office that brings us information about making decisions that we need to make. And it seems to me that actually having that breadth of experience working with all different kinds and levels of local units of government actually allows that office to come to us and make much better and much better informed decisions about what's going on at the local level. And so that's more what it's that part of what the expertise is as well, is their advising function to us, as well as, just knowing how, having observed an issue in one county actually may allow you to see it much more clearly in another county. So it's kind of both directions.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure, maybe both the auditor and Representative Thiessen want to comment on this. Representative Thiessen, I just want to make sure that I understand when we talk about the cost on this. Because right now, the counties do pay the auditor's offices, so if I understand what you're proposing, it would be all counties would just, as a matter of function, just be audited by the auditor's office, and so there wouldn't be any of this, the cost back and forth. Am I correct on that?
Representative Thiessen?
Madam Chair, that's what I tried to do.
Okay.
I think that's what the language does, yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, the reason I ask that is right now, Representative Thiessen, the auditor's office has exempted several counties in the state of Minnesota from using the auditor's functions. So I'm just wondering if there isn't an embedded cost in this, if all counties, say the Hennepin County being one of them that's exempted, is paying for those services, would they then come back and say, well, if we don't have to pay for those services, we can get into the auditor? Are there embedded costs in here that aren't anticipated by the bill?
Representative Thiessen.
I don't know if they're unanticipated. We don't have a fiscal note on this. Undoubtedly, this is going to cost the state much more money than we are currently spending because it's coming from us instead of the county. So, I guess, frankly, I hadn't thought about how we would, maybe that's one of the details you were talking about, how we would deal with counties that have been exempted from the state auditor's audit. But if the state is doing it at no charge to the county, I would imagine a lot of them would come back.
Madam Chair, maybe those counties could then use that money to buy election equipment, but that's a different story for a different day. Madam Chair, I do have, then the next logical question is, okay, so counties are political subdivisions and creatures of the state, so are cities, so are school districts. Would we just cascade that down into those local units of government as well?
Representative Thiessen.
Madam Chair, the intent of the bill would be that whoever is audited by the state auditor would not pay for those audits.
Representative Representative Driscoll?
No more questions.
Okay. And to that, then, given all those parameters, Madam Auditor, I'm guessing that you've given some thought on what the dollar figure would be. So based upon if, you know, I definitely Hennepin County, I'm sure if they can get you to audit them for free rather than paying the CPA firm that they have currently, what are we talking about here cost-wise? Can you give us a ballpark figure?
Madam Chair, there are quite a few technical issues, a couple things that haven't been mentioned. The taxpayers can petition our audit to audit a local government. And so if the local government, right now the local government has to pay for it, and so when people go to gather enough signatures to get a petition of their community, they're made aware that their community will have to pay for the petition audit. If that was free, that we might be getting a lot more petition audits. So that's something that we could not predict. Another piece we can't predict is request audits. So currently we have a request audit in from a township who cannot find a private firm to audit them that's qualified. And we have another one we think that's going to be coming in where they cannot find a private firm who's qualified to audit them. And so we can't predict those. Now, if they didn't have to pay, again, that there might be a greater demand, especially for the really small entities. And so I think that's why we probably want to work through this. Right now, if we were to stay just at the level of work that we're doing, it's about $15 million for the biennium. If there was going to be an expansion or a greater demand, you know, that would be another question as to would we do all of them that come through, or then do we, right now I guess the big question in the courts is what our authority is. If we have the authority to take back counties on behalf of the taxpayers, right now they're not exempted from our audits. They are required to retain a private firm, and we at any time can take them back if we feel it's in the public's interest. So just to clarify, Representative Driscoll. And so really that's why I think the details need to be worked out on how far you'd want it to go. Another question, you want them to have some skin in the game so that they do prepare the records, you know, in a timely manner. If they don't, we have to come back, you know, leave, come back, leave, come back. It adds to the audit costs. If the records aren't properly prepared, there's additional audit requirements and testing that we have to do, which increase costs. You know, if you, again, we could work on details, but let's say that the state says we'll pay for the first, you know, a certain amount of the audit, maybe 30. Well, they have skin in the game because they're going to want to keep their costs down as much as possible. So there probably are ways to incent that and to make sure that happens. So really there's a lot of details to be worked out. Again, the concept, you know, is an interesting concept. I think it's a good idea. The question is it's the devil's in the details on this one, and that would really have to be worked out. Otherwise, we might be conducting petition audits all the time, and I don't know if that's what you all want.
Representative Ugla?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for the auditor. Madam Auditor, did you say that several counties were having trouble finding qualified auditors to do these audits?
Madam Auditor?
Madam Chair, Representative Ugla, it's the townships. We have townships that are having a hard time, yeah.
Representative Google.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Auditor, I mean, with big eight accounting firms like KPMG and all the accounting firms, I mean, there's literally thousands of accounting firms in the state of Minnesota, and I find that just very difficult. How are they looking for these auditors? I mean, they're out there. Why is that a problem?
Madam Auditor?
Madam Chair, Representative Ugla, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Yeah, close enough.
Oh,
Ugla?
Ugla. Ugla, I'm sorry. Sometimes there's not an interest. So when I was in business years ago, sometimes the really small clients, you got very little profit out of, and the accounting industry was one of the most profitable industries. I believe it was in 2016, and they want to make a profit. And you know, our townships can be fairly small, and if they don't, you know, sometimes there's a greater hassle factor. They're going to have a very small staff, if maybe a 0.5 staff, and so firms get to make decisions in terms of who they audit or don't, and if they need the work or don't. That's why we've always been here, because we have a deep expertise in government auditing and accounting. And if there's a time when firms don't want to audit government or there's something bigger and better that's come along, that we're always here and have the expertise to do that work. So we do get these requests from time to time from little and smaller entities that need the work done.
Representative Uglin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Madam Auditor, when you talk about townships and small entities, cities have to be audited too. And there's big cities and there's little cities. And every one of those cities is being audited most likely by a local firm. I find it difficult to believe that the local firm or area firm couldn't do the township stuff too. I know that there's a very large firm in Minnesota that does specialize in the software for all of this too. So I guess I'm just astounded to hear that. Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Anyone else that wishes to testify to this bill? Representative Vogel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and maybe Representative Thiessen. A concern that I would have in this is right now, because of the competition that exists, there's a pricing mechanism in place that keeps everybody in line. If indeed we transfer this, that there is no pricing mechanism in line, how do we know if we're paying the right amount?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I mean, I think that's what we do all the time. That's, you know, frankly, in government. And, you know, there's benchmarking you can do. You know, I would say, and it's not necessarily accounting, you know, we hired Deloitte to do a report for us, paid them $400,000 on retirement security. It's taken 2 years. They've missed their deadline by a year and a half, and the report we've gotten is crap. So I don't think just because we're going to a private firm means that you're actually going to get a better result. And I think that really is an important point. We talk about price competition a lot, and there's ways to do that. I mean, we can benchmark against the private market to make sure that we're doing the right thing. So there's ways to simulate that market. But knowing the quality of what we're getting back, I think is really, that's why this consistency, I think, actually is a real thing. Maybe this is a disagreement we have. But I don't think the private market and just competing on price is always the right place to go, because competing on price many times is a race to the bottom, is to try to get the lowest price. And so, you know, I guess there are ways that we can handle that by benchmarking, but I also think the quality is really important. That's not to say there's not great accounting firms doing great work out there, of course, and I hope that it's not taken that way. But just because it's the private sector doing something and just because it's a big-name firm doing something doesn't mean we're getting the highest quality work possible.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I guess, first of all, I do believe that there are good firms out there that do good work.
Of course there are.
And my feeling is that that will be judged by who's ever employing them. So we've got 87 counties, and if somebody is really doing a crappy job, to use the expression, my sense is that that reputation will get around, and therefore maybe they won't have as much work, but there'll be other accounting firms that can pick up the slack. And with a number of accounting firms, and I would assume that there must be some profitability in doing it because they're doing it now, at least we have a market price, and we know what it is. My concern is, much as you did say, is when we sit here and that we only have one provider and it's us, we really don't have a good way a lot of times in telling whether we're being as efficient or not, and I'd be concerned on this. If we break up the efficiency of that marketplace that we have now and just make it basically a monopoly, how do we know that we're giving the clients the best value? Because we're all paying for it. It is not free. We're all going to pay for it. How do we ensure that over a long period of time, as you have a monopoly, that you're keeping the price competitive and the quality?
Representative.
Yeah, no, I think those are fair questions. And, you know, I do think that there would be ways to benchmark against equivalent kinds of pricing. I also think in terms of quality, you know, finding out whether that's kind of the oversight job of this committee, partly. I think those are legitimate considerations, and frankly, I had something else in my mind, and I've forgotten it, so there we go.
Madam Auditor.
Madam Chair, and Representative Vogel and committee members. You know, just to point out, the legislative auditor did do a special review based on what the legislature asked them to do on audit costs, and the report was pretty inconclusive, and so... And I know there was a testifier a year or two ago in committee from a county who said that counties who are audited by private firms pay half of what they pay the state auditor, but that since has been disproven. Just I wanted to make sure that that's clear. We did analysis on it, and it was false. So, and they later admitted, they said they were not informed when they made the statement to the committee. So I think there are ways to keep an eye on it, but there are things even the legislative auditor could not get from the private firms. And I would say for our office and our staff, there's a couple different deadlines that we have to get all of our work done within a certain period of time. So you have your GFOA audits, which are June 30 audits. And then you have the next deadline are your single audits. That's the federal money. Those are due by September 30. And they're pretty hard deadlines. The GFOA audits, sometimes the GFOA will give them some extensions. Single audit, there are no extensions anymore. And then after that, it's any other audit. So everyone's in a compressed time period. And we've really pushed our clients to be prepared for us, have proper training, be able to prepare the schedules and everything else they're required to, so we can get in and do that work and then get out, so it's efficient for everyone. So there's already some natural pieces built into the system that requires everybody be, you know, all hands on deck, and that there's good workflow for the office so that everyone gets what they need. And the nature of auditing is fairly conservative, and the people that do it are fairly conservative. And so the staff that I have are very conscious of the fact that they're funded through taxpayer money, and they're very, very frugal. But part of it is on that client side. But the clients have really come a long way generally. But in terms of cheap audits, I would say, to Representative Thiessen's point, I don't know that that's what we're going after in Minnesota and if that's really what we want. I will also, one more, a county would not know whether they had a good auditor or not because they're not trained in the skill of understanding what, you know, the best audit is and all of that. They have a slightly different job, and so they're assuming that they have good auditors when they hire a private firm, those that have. What we've done over time is for those that we've required to work with a private firm, we do take counties back when we see that there's issues. And so right now that authority of being able to take them back when we see issues with the work being done is in question, and it's in the courts, as you know. So hopefully that will be resolved soon.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, as we talk, and I think you've explained to us before that you are the benchmark when it comes to whether or not they're doing the proper work. So I wasn't suggesting that you weren't, that if the state auditor did it, it wasn't a good job. And I'm not suggesting even that this is the cheapest is the best. I guess what I'm looking at is that there's a host of providers out there now that we have a nice fluid marketplace where people can look and choose from different options relative to quality and price. And that we have a stopgap, that if indeed the auditor's office doesn't feel that is quality work, that you have the authority to step in and say, you know what, this firm isn't doing it. So we are giving the cities and the counties and the school districts and the availability of that oversight, which is great from your office, but, again, disrupting that marketplace where there's probably, I believe there are a lot of good providers. They're not, you know, there may be some that are doing shoddy work, but what we're doing by doing this, and my concern is that we're breaking up a good functioning marketplace, and when that's been tried before, sometimes, especially by government, it doesn't work. So, thank you.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Auditor, you mentioned that you just did an internal study, or there was a study done of the price competitiveness of outside and internal. You were just talking to Representative Vogel about that, and because I'm always interested in seeing these types of studies, are you able to provide that to us?
Madam Chair, you all traveled the state with that report. It was the legislative auditor's report, if you recall, and it was an inconclusive report around the cost of the audits. Representative Nash, you probably were in the middle of something, but yeah, that was conducted by the legislative auditor, and it was statutorily required, and it was inconclusive because he was not able to get his hands on the information he needed to analyze the private firms. And so he was not able to conclude anything from that report.
Representative
Nash. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Madam Auditor, I was confused by your words because you said that your staff had done some of that that work.
Okay. I've got a question. Representative Thiessen, you had mentioned the responsibility of this committee to provide oversight of the state auditor. So you see that as a valuable piece in your piece of legislation?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if it's mentioned in the legislation, but I think it's a job for every committee to oversee that people that that committee funds. Yes.
So, Representative Thiessen, in your view, for this legislation, if this were to be enacted, it would be our responsibility as our committee to ask questions about how the audits are performed, if they're meeting the goal, if they are effective, if they're timely, if they are being performed efficiently.
Madam Chair, yes, and I hope that you're already doing that.
We try our best as much as we can. Members, any other questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see there was another one. I was just going to clarify a little bit with the townships and not finding qualified auditors. I don't think that there's the problem is that there's not qualified auditors. I think that to remember that there's just under 1,800 townships. Some of them, including the one I served on, we had an annual budget of about $35,000. The audits are very, very simple. But one of the things that I found in the township is that a lot of the people that serve on there don't go out shopping for audits. They just simply use the state because it's convenient. And it is kind of spendy for the amount of money that we're doing there. And so maybe with the new laws here, that were just passed, that we can maybe push those guys to go out and seek some other audits. And I think with that many townships out there that will now be needing audits, I think you might find more people stepping up to do them as well.
Okay. Representative Olson. Okay. Members, any other questions? Representative Thiessen, final comments?
No.
Okay. We appreciate you coming by. Again, it was an informational hearing. Appreciate your time. Members, with that, we are done with that portion of our committee process. I just want to give you a heads up for what we can expect for next week. Monday, we are going to be doing a walkthrough of the bill and hopefully be able to start people providing testimony on the omnibus bill as well. And then Tuesday, it's our goal to mark up the bill. So I would plan for being here late Monday, late on Tuesday, and just keep that in your perspective. The bill, our goal is to have it posted sometime on Sunday, and so if you can look for that. And Representative Johnson, any comments?
Question, Madam Chair.
Yep, that's the goal. Mm-hmm. All right, members, with that, we are adjourned. We'll see you next week.